I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and we are going to be speaking with Molly Ball this hour. Molly has a very, it's an important piece, and it's very timely because of all the town hall meetings that took place yesterday, and they've taken place over the last couple weeks. Her latest piece in The Atlantic is headlined, "Is the Anti-Trump Resistance the New Tea Party?" 8 years ago, a new president took office who scared the living daylights out of thousands of people who'd never been politically active before. Sound familiar? Molly is a terrific journalist. She is a staff writer for The Atlantic, covers national politics, and we'll be talking about all these very large protests that are taking place in districts all over the country. And welcome your phone calls as well. What do you make of all of this? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Molly, we thank you ever so much for joining us again. Hi.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you, Molly. There are so many of these town hall meetings, you can hardly keep up with them. I was going through them this morning. They're all over the country with very, very large groups of people.
There's a lot of passion out there. And what I learned covering the Tea Party since its inception 8 years ago was that money really can't buy this kind of passion. I think when the Tea Party arose 8 years ago, you heard a lot of Democrats who, remember, were sitting pretty. Obama just been elected. Democrats had majorities in the House and Senate. And they were saying, oh, this is just the Koch brothers, this is just Republicans, this is just our opposition, and of course there's a party that opposes us, but it's not something we have to take seriously. I think that we still don't know whether the passion that is now being provoked will be sustained or will have the kind of impact on politics that the Tea Party did. But what I learned from covering the Tea Party is that you can't fake this kind of passion, that it is organic to some extent. If the Democrats or George Soros or whoever could have spent a few million dollars and made these kinds of crowds appear at town halls in years past, they absolutely would have. But the people had not been provoked in the way that they have today.
You say in your piece in The Atlantic, which is really very well done, parallels are striking between this Tea Party and this new activism, a massive grassroots movement, many of its members new to activism, and it feeds primarily off fear and reaction. What are the other parallels that you see, and amplify on those statements, please?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, the Tea Party was seen by a lot of people as a sort of right-wing movement that wanted to move the Republican Party to the right. I think it was actually a reaction to the Obama presidency specifically. Otherwise, again, it would have gained steam before Obama was elected. And so what it really was seeking to do was ensure that Republicans didn't cooperate with Obama in any way. And where it really drew its energy was from the anger at Obama among a grassroots base, many of whom were not previously, many weren't even Republicans, many had never been politically active before. They saw what was happening in Washington, it freaked them out, and they got involved and they stayed involved. They formed local chapters, they got involved in their local Republican Party. The healthcare town halls didn't happen for several more months. So it took a while, but it was sustained over time. And I think what we're seeing right now, there's been a temptation to see it also through the lens of an ideological battle, to say, oh, this is the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party trying to move the Democrats to the left. This is an ideological battle between sort of centrists and progressives, the Hillary Clinton types and the Bernie Sanders types. I don't think that's true. I think this is purely motivated by fear and anger at the new president, at Donald Trump, and that is what's powering it. And the pressure is going to be on Democrats to not give anything, not collaborate in any way with the president.
You worry we've already been through many, many years of not much getting done because of the incredible partisanship. You begin the article by talking about the Republican senator from Utah, Bob Bennett, who people got mad at him because he was at the inauguration of Barack Obama. He didn't vote for him, but he was there, and it was a peaceful transfer of power, and he was a reasonable guy, as the president had met with Republicans who were, he considered, you know, we ought to be able to talk to each other. Well, as a result of the Tea Party, people were not able to talk to each other. So a couple questions. What happened to Bob Bennett, and do you think that what's happening now, the protests against Republicans, will result in even more gridlock?
Yeah, I'll take those questions one at a time. So the story of Bob Bennett is an interesting and a sad one. He was a Republican from Utah who'd always been considered very conservative. He believed in governing. He believed in incrementally advancing the ball to make policy more conservative, but he'd never been considered much of a moderate. But because he stood there smiling while Obama was inaugurated, and because he was willing to work with the president where he thought it could advance his goals, he was targeted by the Tea Party, and his defeat in a primary, he'd never even been challenged in a Republican primary before in Utah, and he was taken out in the primary by a young conservative by the name of Mike Lee, who is still a senator from Utah. And so this was an early indication of how powerful the Tea Party would be, that it was not just a couple hundred people shouting at town halls. They actually had the power to win elections and destabilize an entire major political party. I mean, when you take out a sitting United States senator, that's power. And the other thing about the case of Bob Bennett, as I mentioned before, I think it was a sort of case study in the anti-Obama sentiment that powered a lot of the grassroots of the Tea Party. Bob Bennett lost his primary and then for several more years became a sort of canary in the coal mine, warning his fellow Republicans against what he saw as a destructive force. As the candidacy of Donald Trump rose in 2016, Bennett was very alarmed. I think as a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, he shared that sentiment with many Mormons who didn't like Trump's racial and religious provocations. And so Bob Bennett actually died in May of 2016, and on his deathbed, he apologized to the Muslims of America on behalf of Donald Trump. He told his relatives who were gathered there with him as he lay dying to please go and tell all the Muslims they could find in the hospital to apologize on behalf of the Republican Party. So he felt very strongly about the rise of Trump.
Yeah, that's pretty dramatic. Did the Tea Party lead to Donald Trump?
I think it did. I am of two minds about this a little bit, because Trump, I think, redrew the lines in the Republican Party in a specific way. So you had a lot of Tea Party leaders like Glenn Beck who didn't like Trump at all because they perceived him as not being a conservative. On the other hand, a lot of the grassroots of the party who had been followers of someone like Glenn Beck, they did like Trump because even if he wasn't conservative or reliable on policy issues, he was more anti-Obama than the next guy. He was more anti-Obama, not just than the moderates in the Republican field, but even than someone like Ted Cruz, who built his whole career on speaking for the Tea Party. Trump was able to sort of disrupt the whole paradigm, I think, because he correctly saw that the motivation against Obama was much stronger than any ideological passion on the part of this grassroots. So you had Tea Party figures like Glenn Beck opposed to Trump, Tea Party figures like Sarah Palin in favor of Trump, and he sort of split the Tea Party, and I think he also split the Republican establishment and formed a sort of new coalition out of different parts of the divisions that previously existed in the party.
Molly Ball is our guest this hour. Her piece in The Atlantic deals with the anti-Trump resistance, which has been on full display last night, certainly, and over the last couple weeks. And we're welcoming phone calls for her as well. We have a busy hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. Ann in Green Bay would like to talk with you, Molly. Hi, Ann. Ann, are you there? Well, she's not. Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was going to ask your guest, just does the left, the people who are protesting Donald Trump right now, are they more open to compromise and getting things done than the people on the far right, the Tea Parties, who were so obstructionist that nothing got done during the Obama years? Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question. I mean, I think absolutely not from the signs that we're seeing so far. What we have seen from the anti-Trump protesters is that a lot of their anger has been directed at Democrats who they see as letting Trump get away with things. We've seen protests against Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, at his office in Brooklyn, the protesters urging him not to work with the administration. In the current race for Democratic National Committee chair, there's been a new group formed dedicated specifically to challenging in a primary any Democrat in Congress who collaborates with the administration. It's called We Will Replace You, this new group. There were shouts and heckling of one of the DNC chair candidates, Tom Perez, when he refused to commit to those kinds of primary challenges. And numerous senators who voted for any of Trump's cabinet picks have received primary threats from their constituents in the so-called resistance. So I think we're seeing... I think it was easy during the Obama years to view it as a sort of personality difference between Democrats and Republicans, that Democrats mostly wanted to get things done in compromise, and Republicans mostly wanted their representatives to stand on principle. That may have just been because Democrats had the White House, so they wanted Republicans to go along. And now that a Republican is in the White House, suddenly there's been a personality transplant, and it's Democrats who believe it's the passionate Democratic grassroots that believes in standing on principle, even when that means total opposition. And it's Republicans who are suddenly saying, hey, why can't we compromise? Why can't we find ways to work together? Well, it's a funny coincidence.
Let's do another phone call, and it's Ann in Green Bay is back. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Well, word is out that there has been a town hall planned for tonight at the Brown County Library, Pine Street in Green Bay at 5 p.m., and rumor has it that Ron Johnson will not even be there.
There are rumors. When are you going to know the truth?
Well, I guess when we get there, but I don't anticipate him personally being there because he's... That's the way he is.
How many people have not shown up, Republicans who have been concerned about safety or concerned about crowds or whatever, Molly?
It's an interesting political problem for Republicans because, and there's a lot of angst about this. I don't have actual numbers of how many have planned things and been canceled versus deciding to show up. But the calculation is you may get some bad press for being too, chicken to show up before your constituents and answer their concerns. That's probably dwarfed by the amount of negative coverage that you get when you do show up and you're booed and you're heckled and you face hostile questions and potentially you make a gaffe or you have to, or you decide that you're going to make a run for it after only a little while. It's a difficult calculation for these Republicans who have to obviously be responsible to their constituents. That's part of their responsibility.
Sure.
As elected officials, but also on a political level, want to avoid creating a spectacle that puts them in the news as they view it unfairly.
Molly Ball is our guest this hour. We're talking about the resistance movement. There have been a huge number of town hall meetings. Some senators and members of Congress have decided not to attend, worried about the numbers of people and the angry nature of the crowds that they have been facing. Others have shown up and have carried on with very long interactions with the people who have gathered and have protested about what will replace the Affordable Care Act, Russian influence of the election. There's been a lot of call for investigation of that and many other issues. We're talking about that with Molly, whose current piece in The Atlantic, which is on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, well worth your attention, is the anti-Trump resistance, the new Tea Party. Tons of phone calls coming in as well. You can be sure we'll get to all of you in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We are talking this hour with Molly Ball, and Molly has written a very important piece in The Atlantic, and it's about the resistance and whether or not there is a comparison with the Tea Party protest that took place. Here's just an example to give you an idea, if you haven't heard many of these, of some of the comments from constituents. This one from Senator Tom Cotton at an Arkansas town hall meeting that was just filled. The balcony was filled. The lower level was filled. There was an overflow of room that was filled, and this is some of what people had to say.
Will you commit today to replacement protections for those Arkansans like me who will die or lose their quality of life or otherwise be unable to be participating citizens trying to get their part of the American dream.
My husband with dementia, Alzheimer's, and plus multiple other things. And you want to stand there with him at home, expect us to be calm, cool, and collective. Wow, what kind of insurance do you have?
Donald Trump makes Mexicans not important to people who are in Arkansas, who like Mexicans, like me, my grandma, and all my people. And he's deleting all the parks and PBS Kids just to make a wall.
Tony, how old are you?
I am almost 8, but I'm 7.
Molly Ball is with us. Just a variety of sampling of the passion that you hear from people and the variety, really, of issues, Molly. It's not just one issue, is it?
No, it's really a number of things. And, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. From what I understand, PBS has not yet been defunded and Big Bird has not been sent to the guillotine. But people are afraid, and when they're afraid, they're willing to believe all kinds of terrible things. And so, you know, there's really no telling where things can go. Now, I should say, the counter-argument to the idea that we are seeing a new Tea Party is a structural one, right? It is pointing out that people like Senator Tom Cotton or Jason Chaffetz in Utah, who's in a very solidly Republican district, or even Ron Johnson, who, although he's in the swing state of Wisconsin, was just reelected, those people don't have anything to fear electorally. And they can continue to do their jobs as they see fit and not have to worry that they're going to lose their next election. And so it remains to be seen whether and how the map that sort of came out of the 2016 presidential election could be changed by a new protest movement. I feel like what I learned from 2016 and from my decade covering politics is that map isn't stable. It's very unpredictable. A state like Wisconsin that isn't supposed to be in play can turn out to be in play, and you find out on election night. But a note of caution for, you know, liberals who are thinking, aha, you know, we've got people at the town halls, we're going to win the House. The way it is structured right now, that's a very, very difficult thing for Democrats to do.
And when you talk about the rumors that people are believing, certainly there were many people in the Tea Party who believed that Barack Obama was a Muslim, that he wasn't born in the United States, that the fist bump was some terrorist signal, as you remind us in your article. What are the kinds of rumors that are running around right now that people are quick to believe because they're afraid?
Right. I mean, we see a lot of rumors taking off, sort of a liberal version of fake news, where either there will be an innocent mistake in the media and it gets passed around on Facebook before it can be corrected. There was something that I think NBC News reported that there was already an effort to unwind the Russian sanctions that turned out not to be true. It turned out to be sort of a misinterpretation. So some of them are innocent mistakes. Some of them are actual hoaxes or beliefs, things people strongly want to believe for which there simply isn't any evidence, like the idea that's very popular on the left that the voting machines were actually hacked by the Russians in order to hand Donald Trump the election. And, you know, there's been a lot of looking into this, and there just hasn't been any evidence to be found for it. But it's something that people are strongly motivated to believe, and I think will continue to believe whether the evidence is there or not.
All right, we have a ton of phone calls for you. Nicole in Madison. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. I just want to say that I think the Democratic Party is destroying itself. Because they don't seem to have any control of their emotions. I mean, they're out there and they're even beating up, so kids are beating up another kid on a school bus that says, he's wearing a hat that says, Make America Great Again. And so they're beating him up on a school bus.
Well, I don't know where that story's coming from, but you're worried about the Democratic response to Donald Trump or what?
Okay,
all right, Molly?
No, I think the larger point, I don't think the Democratic Party is responsible for kids beating each other up on school buses, but I do think this question of whether a newly passionately engaged resistance movement is good or bad for the Democratic Party is a really interesting one, mm-hmm. based on the Tea Party parallel for Republicans, because you know, pundits and analysts like me spent 8 years fretting that the Republican Party was destroying itself with all of these divisions, with all of the destructive party primaries, with all of the refusal to be constructive and govern and work with the Democrats in Washington and the gridlock. Look at how Republicans, you know, were so divided and would never win a presidential election again. And a lot of Republicans, a lot of my Republican friends and sources in Washington really thought that the Tea Party was bad for the GOP because of the way it was dividing them and pushing them to the right. But, you know, the Republicans won the House in 2010. They won the House and Senate in 2014. And then in 2016, they won everything. And now Democrats are reduced to a tiny sliver of control. So for people who say, like, oh, you know, they're going to target the Democrats, it's going to be bad for the Democratic Party, they're going to eat their own, it's going to be so destructive for them, and look how tiny a minority they're in. The Tea Party turned out to be sort of a double-edged sword for the Republican Party. It gave them a lot of headaches, and in some cases they did lose elections because they nominated people who weren't electable. But for the most part, I think you have to say that that energy, that passion, that grassroots fervor that arose based on the Tea Party helped the Republicans eventually gain power.
Sherry in Whitewater, hi.
Hello, Kathleen and Molly, too. I want to tell you, in response to the comparison that I keep hearing to the Tea Party, this resistance movement to the Tea Party, that was started by Dick Armey and Americans for Prosperity, and it did not start the same way as this. And I don't think that, as somebody who's in part of this movement, I don't think that we are advocating obstructionism. We want to get things done, but we also want our legislators to have a spine and stand up to people like DeVos and, well, this entire cabinet for the most part. And I want to say two other things. First of all, I've been a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio forever, and if people are listening and they haven't called, they really should call. Even if it's $5 or $10 a month, you need to do this to keep this kind of programming on the air, because we've never needed good investigative journalists more than we do right now.
Thank you, Sherry, for the vote of support, and I think you're absolutely right. We do need to stay around. What about, it would seem, and I think you make this point in the article, that there is this idea that certainly the president has said that the so-called angry crowds in home districts of some Republicans are actually, in numerous cases, planned out by liberal activists. There were beliefs that the Koch brothers or others had started the Tea Party movement. It doesn't appear to me that that's the case. Is it, Molly?
No. Look, there was a progressive movement in this country before the so-called resistance came along, before Trump was elected. There were particularly on the part of people of color protesting police abuse across the country.
Right.
But you did not see hundreds of people at Republican town halls on a regular or everyday basis. And I hear from Republicans all the time, or as you saw in the president's tweet even, oh, you know, this is George Soros, this is the teachers' unions, all the opposition to Betsy DeVos, that
right.
wasn't real, that was just the teachers' unions ginning it up. And I think it is certainly the case that the existing progressive infrastructure, the Democratic Party, and the teachers' unions are encouraging, you know, the resistance, because they would like to harness it to advance their policy goals. But it is not true that they created it, because the rank and file, the regular people who are coming out to this, just like with the Tea Party, these are individual people motivated by the things that they are seeing and hearing. And if there's anything I learned covering politics, it's that you can't really buy elections, because, you know, people have to be motivated to show up.
Does it make a difference? I know that the protests have been all over the place. I've been surprised by the number of people who've been calling for very thorough investigations into the Russian collaboration, if any, with the Trump campaign to deal with the election, to swing the election, in addition to the hacking. Do the people, the Republicans who are at all of these town halls where people are bringing this issue up again and again, do they just think, all right, I've listened to them, I did my job listening to my constituents, I'm going to ignore what's being said here? Or do they go back to Washington and talk among themselves and say, hey, I've heard a lot of concern about these Russian relations. We really better look at this fairly seriously.
There is a Republican effort underway. Now, critics say that it doesn't go far enough or fast enough or transparent enough. But Republicans in Washington, are, for the most part, are concerned about this Russia issue and are proceeding to investigate it. So I don't think it's the case that they're ignoring the concerns in that regard. And I think, you know, politicians are politicians. They are always worried about public opinion. They are always worried about what their constituents think. They also believe in things. And if they have a certain position on an issue, they're not necessarily going to change it overnight just because they get some letters. But from what I understand, talking to, you know, Republicans on Capitol Hill and their staffs, they don't know what to think. They're still in sort of wait and see mode. They're worried about all of the outcry, and they've always, you know, sort of got their finger in the wind to see if the temper is changing. The general feeling right now is Trump is very popular among Republican primary voters. Most Republican members of Congress or senators are more vulnerable to a primary challenge than they are in any general election. And so as long as Trump sort of holds the sway of the Republican base, that's where their loyalty has to be.
Sherry, thanks for your call. We go next to Catherine in Eau Claire. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a member of a resistance group in the Chippewa Valley, and I just wanted to call and tell you my experience. What they were encouraging, if you've had a chance to look at Indivisible Guide, it's very much based on how the Tea Party became powerful 8 years ago. But there's no advocation of being rude or crude or any violence is never discussed. It's just strategies that we can all do to be involved and to stand up and be heard. And for the first time in my 67 years, I am involved, and I know who to call, and we're focused on certain issues that are being discussed currently so that we know who to call within our state of Wisconsin and express our concerns. And again, there is never any focus on violence or anything
right.
rude.
Catherine, and what are your concerns?
The concerns have been you were just talking about the Russian connection. That has not been something that we're focused on yet. Last week we were focused on the voting, and that was specific to Sessions, DeVos, and the third one that's escaping me right at the moment. Availability, especially during this congressional week, availability and more notice for the town halls. We're not being given very much notice. I think we were given notice of Ron Johnson's appearance last week. I think we had 24-hour notice, but there were people who showed up to show support for that program.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Catherine, for the call. Molly, yesterday we were talking with Alec McGillis, who's done fine work in Ohio and mm-hmm. saw what was happening with Trump voters. He was interviewing person after person and was kind of surprised that people who were in their 70s, people on the other side of the issue, like Catherine, who's in her 60s, who's never been really actively involved politically, all of a sudden this huge mass of people were energized to vote for Donald Trump, and now they're energized to protest his policies. People are really out there.
Yeah, the passion is very authentic, and you do hear from a lot of people who have not been politically active before. I see it on Facebook. I've seen it on the ground. And I don't want to make it seem like I'm 100% equating what's happening to the Tea Party, but the echoes are so unmistakable, because in the Tea Party, again, you had so many people who were coming out to protest, and who also, in this interesting way that the caller was, were so obsessed with the good behavior of their protest movement. You heard from the Tea Party all the time, you know, we clean up after ourselves, we don't break anything, we don't have any violence. Now, every protest movement is going to have an unsavory fringe, and there have been instances of violence or of destruction of property on the edges of some of these anti-Trump protests, but a lot of the people who are not sort of protesters by personality, right, who've never seen themselves as someone who would ever take to the streets, those are the kind of people that I kept meeting in the Tea Party who said, I've never wanted to protest anything before, but I'm just so afraid for my country. And a lot of them were sort of older people who had just been going about their lives and never really been politically active, very similar to that caller.
Yeah. Leanne in Madison. Hi, Leanne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening earlier when you were speaking about the origins of the Tea Party, when that they cropped up in response to Barack Obama's election. And it really felt like your guest was tiptoeing around the issue of race. And it's very clear that they opposed President Obama because he's black. And there's a lot of racial elements to the Tea Party. And I just really think that we need to call a spade a spade. We need to say that clearly, that
that race is part of the equation. Do you agree, Molly?
Yeah, I mean, I am tiptoeing around the issue a little bit because I hesitate to impute motivations or to call anybody names. I met a lot of, Tea Party rank and file people who really were convinced that this was just about the issues and that Obama was uniquely terrible. Now, have there been surveys of racial attitudes that have found correlations in that anti-Obama sentiment? Yes, but I just hesitate to impute that motivation to any individual. Was it a reactionary movement? I think it absolutely was. I think Obama galvanized something among this grassroots that was not necessarily logical. But I think that Trump has had a galvanizing effect on people that is perhaps out of proportion to anything that he has actually had the chance to do yet, based on something that people perceive in him.
Molly, we need to ask for support again. Thank you ever so much for all the work you do. We read you all the time. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Molly Ball, staff writer covering national politics at The Atlantic. And we'll end with this comment on Facebook from Michael, which is worth hearing. Both sides will say it's different, and their fear is real, while the other's fear was all in their heads. Both are very similar and refuse to acknowledge that. So I'd say, yes, the resistance is the new Tea Party. Thank you for your comment, Michael. This is the Ideas Network.